Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man whose intelligence I've been long impressed by and who has generously shared it with our audience for years, and many others, fortunately, for the betterment of our country, is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. He served in the Central Intelligence Agency as an analyst, worked on Capitol Hill in a number of capacities, including for the House Armed Services Committee, and became a driving force behind several important congressionally mandated commissions on strategic forces and the phenomenon of electromagnetic pulse, which has made him one of the country's go-to resources on problems like what Texas has experienced, among other states, in recent days, namely grid down. He's a great friend and always a valued guest. We're delighted to have him back. Peter, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Frank.
I want to talk to you, Peter, about basically what went wrong in Texas, which, of course, has its own grid serving most of its population, and has been the subject of extensive efforts, notably by our friend Senator Bob Hall, to enhance its resiliency. If ever there were a case for doing that, it seems evident now. But what's went wrong, and what are the lessons to be learned here?
Well, what went wrong is that, you know, Texas wasn't prepared. The Texas grid and the utilities and ERCOT, you know, which runs the utilities down there, wasn't prepared for an ice storm of that magnitude that affected Texas and affected in some way all of the grid and all sources of electrical energy that are provided there, but affected most of all the wind and solar. Now the administration has tried to make a big deal and has basically lied to the American people, saying that this shows unpreparedness for climate change and that it does not prove that that wind and solar are unreliable sources of energy because they were not the chief reason for the collapse of the Texas grid. And that's a Bill Clinton-esque kind of a hair-splitting lie, you know, because it's true that they weren't the chief reason for the collapse of the Texas grid, because they provide a substantial but not most of the electrical energy. They provide about 25%. But what's misleading and disingenuous about that is that they are the part of the grid that failed most catastrophically. And 25% is still a lot of energy to make up. And the other parts of the grid, while they didn't fail as spectacularly as the wind and solar did, you know, they did have problems. And that's why they had to resort to rolling blackouts. You know, and I think the biggest problem here, you know, was the lack of all of the grid. And Texas is a good example of this. Is constantly operating on the edge of failure. You know, it used to be 20, 30 years ago, you know, that we generated more than enough electricity for our consumption needs. So there was backup, you know, so that you could have a surge capacity in case something went wrong. But now with the growth of our population, and we've become more and more an electronic civilization that requires more and more electricity, you know, we're constantly operating on the edge of failure. So it doesn't take much to push the grid over the edge into failure. And what this most biggest lesson to learn from this, and I'm sure our adversaries are paying attention to this because this is core to their new way of warfare, to attack electric grids and collapse our life-sustaining critical infrastructures, it proves once again how fragile, you know, this most important critical infrastructure, the keystone critical infrastructure, is to anything, to natural attacks. Obviously, if you wanted to go in there and do something like a nuclear EMP attack or a non-nuclear EMP attack, it would be far worse than an ice storm and would result in a collapse of the grid that is probably unrecoverable. And put the population of Texas and our entire nation in the case of a nationwide EMP, which is likely, if they did something like that, it wouldn't be limited to Texas. It would cover all 48 states.
And be catastrophic, as you say. Peter Pry, you work with Dr. William Graham, who famously said that the effects of a sustained power outage over large parts of the country could mean that 90% of our population would perish. And speaking of our adversaries and their monitoring of these things and lessons they're learning in terms of our vulnerabilities, Peter, you've warned for years that those enemies, particularly the most formidable of them, the Russians, the Chinese, the North Koreans, even the Iranians, have had as part of their doctrine attacking our electric grid for precisely these reasons. One thing that has been extremely troubling, as you know, since President Biden put a hold on an executive order by President Trump with respect to foreign equipment in our electric grid, is the fact that we have, by some estimates, between 200 and 300 Chinese large transformers in the grid today. What is your assessment of the danger that that represents, and is there anything that we can do to remedy that situation?
Yeah, I think that that is a clear and present danger. You know, the Chinese can have probably designed, you know, back doors into those transformers. We are also buying control systems, you know, from China that are ubiquitous throughout the electric grid, so that this could make them more vulnerable to cyber attack. They might even be designing the transformers so they'd be more vulnerable to an EMP. And the fact that the president would cancel the executive order that President Trump wisely passed, you know, that was attempting to, well, he suspended it for a 90-day review, but you know, that looks like it's moving in the direction of canceling the executive order. The purpose of that executive order was to make transformers and other control systems in America, you know, to make wean us away from dependency on China. And the fact that he would suspend that executive order in almost the immediate aftermath, we were talking about how this is part of the military doctrines of Russia, China, North Korea. It's not just their, in addition to their doctrines, they actually practice it and exercise it. The suspension of this executive order occurs in almost the immediate aftermath of the SolarWinds hack from Russia, which in my report, Russia EMP Threat, a new report that I published in January, you know, shows the connection that this SolarWinds hack, you know, is occurring in close proximity, appears to be coordinated with the strategic forces exercise and a demonstration and an exercise demonstrating their ability to use to attack our space assets as well. You know, they had a big exercise personally directed by Putin to use all three legs of their nuclear triad, you know, while the SolarWinds thing is going on. It's very reminiscent of what happened in the biggest exercise possibly in human history, Vostok 18, that was held in September of 2018 and was preceded, you know, by attacks, cyber attacks, cyber intrusions on hundreds of U.S. electric utilities. It really shouldn't take a genius to see that if you're planning to take down the United States, if you're planning for World War III, you're probably going to want to precede that with an attack that takes down the electric grid, you know, so that, because we can't fight without electricity.
Absolutely. Fight or survive, for that matter. Peter Pry, your warnings on this have been so important, and we appreciate you sharing them with us again today. I want to come back to you about these exercises and the insights that you're sharing with us about them. I thank you for your time today. Come back to us again very soon. And next up, we will speak with Kevin Freeman. We'll get a firsthand perspective on grid down in Texas, as well as what's at risk in terms of our currency if the Chinese have their way. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, and we're joined by Kevin Freeman. He is the proprietor of the Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman. You can find it at Blaze TV and elsewhere. He is the author of Secret Weapon and Game Plan, two terrific best-selling books. He is also to be found at globaleconomicwarfare.com. And one of my favorite things that he does is the National Security Investment Consultants Institute. We might draw him out a little bit on that if we have time. Kevin, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us, sir.
Thank you, Frank. Always good to be with you.
I wanted to start with the topic that I know has been on your mind greatly of late. You've written about it in your books and often addressed it in your television program and blog posts and so on, and that is the state of the grid. We talked a bit about it in the previous segment with our friend Peter Pry, but you've had firsthand experience of what went down in Texas, and be interested in your thoughts both as to the magnitude of the problem that what your state went through and others in recent days gives us a taste of, and how hard it's going to be now with that experience in hand to get the grid of your own state, at least, and hopefully the nation, made considerably more resilient.
Well, the fact is, Frank, that our grid was prepared for global warming. It wasn't prepared for a deep freeze. I mean, we instituted so much power coming from windmills and from other green energy, and they're just were not useful. They're just not useful when you have adverse circumstances. In fact, they're not useful a lot of times. And the idea that we're going to have a one or the other approach is foolish. The idea that, oh, we have to switch off fossil fuels. We will be dependent on fossil fuels for a long time, even with a robust green energy push. And the idea that a Biden administration apparently has rules that limited the amount of fossil fuels we could apply in emergency. I haven't traced that down, but it sounds right. It's just appalling. Washington's policies put Texas at risk, and there were people in Texas that went along with those policies, and we should have relied on reliable fossil fuels, at least in emergency situations. And what really appalled me was the Washington Post had the "It's time to give up on Texas exceptionalism," and they were almost gleeful that our grid went down, just like Bette Midler was gleeful that people were dying and freezing and economically harmed because it showed Texas. And it's just appalling.
Well, this is what the coasts think of the heartland, it turns out. And I'm shocked to say that there are apparently people who are willing to do so in a very public fashion. You mentioned a couple. Kevin, I wonder, it's worth just a further word on this. Most of us are probably not aware of the workings of the grid, but there is a very important distinction between what's called baseload power and these so-called renewables. Talk a little bit about the differences. And, you know, it's kind of the difference between, as Mark Twain used to say, lightning and lightning bugs, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, the reality of it is that you can get tremendous power from wind when the wind is blowing, and if it's not blowing, you don't get the power. And you can get tremendous power from solar when the sun is shining, and they're not covered up with snow. But a nuclear plant or a natural gas plant that has been properly weatherized, that has been prepared for an all-hazards attack, is very reliable. But I think the other point we need to take away from this whole grid story is that even the most reliable forms can be taken down, whether by a cyber attack or a man-made event or a natural storm or a solar storm. Any one of those takes the power out and you see absolute chaos. Society depends on electricity. Bob Hall said it's the third most important thing we have. It's air, water, electricity, and then food, because you can go longer without food than you can without electricity.
And Bob Hall, of course, is the state senator in Texas who's been really leading for 6 years or so, at least, the effort to try to make the Texas grid more resilient and a model for the rest of us. And sadly, he was thwarted in the past. I hope this time around he's said to me on one of our programs that he thinks that the wind is at his back now, that he's got the attention of enough of his colleagues to actually get this kind of legislative effort done, and I pray that will be the case. Kevin, let me turn to another subject that I know you're following closely, and that is the extent to which China is perhaps going to be a big beneficiary of this stimulus bill that the Congress is poised to take up, insofar as we'll be making the case further that they've been capitalizing on, that our currency is grossly overvalued and should not be the reserve currency of the world. Talk us through that quickly, if you would.
Sure. I hope that our currency isn't grossly overvalued, but the way to make it grossly overvalued is just print so much of it and put out stimulus after stimulus. When you hit $30 trillion in debt and don't appear to be slowing at all, you say that this is eventually going to be worthless. And the rest of the world is paying attention, and China is taking advantage of it. They want to replace and displace the U.S. dollar for international trade. They want to put us into a poor nation state like a Venezuela or a Zimbabwe. They want the world to dictate to America, you profligate spenders. And in this spending bill, this stimulus, there's a lot of money that's not going to the American people at all. It's going for all kinds of things outside of what government should be doing, and especially helping other countries, which is great. At some point, you have to say, we can't borrow more money to spend on these things. We need to restore our economy, get people back to work. I understand that. And yet, closing schools and keeping businesses shut down and limiting everything that we're doing over the coronavirus, even as we see improvements being made, as we see vaccines coming on, doesn't seem the right approach. Throwing money at the problem, rather get the economy moving.
And to the extent that we are not doing that, to the extent that we are printing money, to the extent that we are encouraging people to think that we're going to be just endlessly trying to borrow more. As you've described in the past, Kevin, we're creating a formula for disaster for our country. We simply won't be able to pay for what we have to borrow and do the other things that government does have to do, among other things, of course, protecting our country. So this is a moment where these kinds of considerations ought to be front and center in the minds of those voting on these multi-trillion dollar bills, and I'm not sure that's happening. Do you see evidence of it?
No, you're exactly right. We're just assuming that the dollar's, it's the myth of dollar permanence. So, Frank, what we're talking about is at 6% interest rates, $30 trillion in debt, and a lot of economists believe we're headed to 6% interest rates, would be $1.8 trillion in interest alone on our national debt. $1.8 trillion. That's more than we spend on national defense. It's more than we spend on Social Security or any of the other government programs. It's more than half of the tax revenues. And what this is Washington from the top telling us how to live. We need to go back to where we were as individuals with individual liberty and making decisions at the smallest local level, family level, then the local level, then the state level. The government's just cramming this stuff down on us, taking our money and spending it like they want to and telling us exactly how we have to live. This is not sustainable for America. It is not how America was developed, and it is not how America can be sustained.
I turn to one last topic with you quickly. I know your upcoming show on The Blaze TV, Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman, is featured on a topic we've been touching on practically daily here because it is of such enormous concern, namely this bill called the For the People Act, better known perhaps as H.R. 1, Nancy Pelosi's top priority, and apparently Chuck Schumer's got it as a top priority as well. Give us just quickly, you know, what you found in your review of this bill for the Economic War Room team.
Well, it's the For the Government Act. It's For the People in Power Act. It has nothing to do with the actual people. It is a mechanism by which the Democratic Party can ensure that they control the government for ad nauseum, forever. And they're throwing it all in there now. They see this as an opportune time to bring in mass immigration, make them all citizens, give them all driver's licenses and voting cards, and add new states and do a whole series of things, mass mail-in ballots, that will guarantee that they can control the government forever. It's the exact opposite of what we need. America is built on the individual liberty. This is built on a overwhelming, overpowering federal government control. It's even so bad, Frank, that the Congress people are paying themselves salaries while they campaign. They get a salary out of being a member of Congress, but they also get a salary for conducting a campaign at taxpayer expense.
Yeah, I'm told, and it's an obscenely large amount too. I've heard $600,000, something like that. I mean, that it is obscene.
It's obscene and outrageous, and it is weird. We are the government. We're in charge, and you, the people, work for us. And it's the exact opposite of what was intended by our founding fathers.
Intend you to work harder and give us more of your money so that we can spend it the way we'd like. Kevin Freeman, we have to leave it at that, but I do think this just adds urgency to the effort to try to make sure that particularly the 47 Democrats who are in vulnerable seats, I'm told, are aware of how the American people feel about this. I gather that they've all co-sponsored H.R. 1, so presumably they will go in lockstep to vote for it, but they certainly ought to hear from all of us that this is not acceptable and will be a formula for, you know, recriminations if it is in fact enacted. Thank you, Kevin, for your time and your expertise and the great work you do, among other places, at the Economic War Room. We'll look forward to our visit with you again next week. Next up, we'll speak with J.R. Nyquist about the Chinese and what they're making of what we're doing to ourselves now, and more straight ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined by J.R. Nyquist, a man we have the privilege of taking stock of the state of the free world with just about every week. You can follow him at jrnyquist.blog. He is also the author of a number of important books, including The Fool and His Enemy, which is a study of the metaphysics of evil. He is a contributor to the Epoch Times and to our program quite frequently, for which we're very grateful. And Jeff, welcome back. It's good to have you as always.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking a bit about China and its seeming determined effort to take us down. Kevin Freeman shared with us some of his concerns about what the Chinese are up to in terms of displacing the dollar as the reserve currency of the world. The president is seemingly of the view that these guys are really just sort of strategic competitors, not a threat. The Chinese are telling us that they're very anxious to have a reset of relations with the Biden administration. I am interested in what you make of what the Chinese are actually thinking about the present moment vis-a-vis us, and more to the point, what are they doing about it?
Well, it's when somebody's trying to take down your currency, and when that completely destabilizes you politically, and your country is engaged in a massive, you know, polarization, where the left is going further left and the right is going further right, it's not a friendly gesture to do that. They know what they're doing. China has an ancient history of, you know, their Sun Tzu and Han Fei Tzu, so they understand all these things very well, better than most Americans, or better than most American strategists. It's a complete mistake to regard them as competitors, not as enemies. They regard themselves as our enemies. If somebody is out to get you, you know, you've got to protect yourself. You've got to be defensive.
And more to the point, they make very little secret of the fact that they're out to get us. You know, that's the thing that's sort of the killer, aside from these, you know, periodic comments about wanting improved relations, Jeff. The narratives out of China are pretty unmistakable that they seek to be the dominant power in the world, and we are the impediment to that, and we must be disposed of. I think it's pretty much that simple, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is that simple. They want to dominate the Pacific. It means they don't like our Navy. They don't like us being a military power. But there's even more sinister, you know, thoughts in China. I mean, last year we were hearing out of China the idea from the Chinese people that they're being told that war with the United States is coming and get ready. I mean, it was in all the Chinese papers. It was in their military publications last year. We have this virus from them, this wonderful gift that we got last year.
You say that obviously facetiously. This is a horror with 500,000 of us dead.
500,000 dead. It's, you know, they are such wonderful friends, right? But, you know, the thing is that what are they up to with this? We don't even, we never got any answers from these people about whether this virus, you know, escaped from a lab or was, they claim, I think they still maintain it came out of a fish market or something.
A wet market, yes.
So these are people that lie, they cheat, they use a trade relationship to damage us. We should, if we were smart, we wouldn't even have an embassy or consulate here. We wouldn't be allowing their people to infiltrate our country the way we do. And they're all over Latin America, by the way, infiltrating, bringing people all over Africa, doing the same thing in sub-Saharan Africa.
Throughout Africa, actually, above the Sahara as well as below. And the thing about that, Jeff, is, in fact, our Committee on the Present Danger China, of which you are a distinguished founding member, is hard at work right now on a study of this Belt and Road Initiative. And I was stunned to discover, we'll be talking more about it in the days to come, but that there are something like 145 nations out of a total of about 193 that are actually already involved with or are in the process of negotiating participation in this so-called Belt and Road Initiative, which is clearly a kind of colonial build-out of a Chinese empire to support the kind of world domination they seek, is it not?
Yes, it is. Well, you know, you go into Africa and you see the Chinese do not have a history of philanthropy. So for them to be building roads and infrastructure, no, this is, you know, and then for their people to be moving in, and then the local people are saying, why are Chinese, you know, I think in South Africa recently there was a complaint because one of the ministers in the government is a Chinese national, you know, so it's like, yeah, why are they, yeah, why, you know, and some of the black folks there were getting upset, but yeah.
The Han Chinese are notably racists, so I think that adds insult to the injury of having them do most of the work, if not all of it, on these projects. And Jeff, one other thing that I think is worth noting is that, as you say, the arrangements under which they do these things, they're not philanthropic. They're building infrastructure with debt trap lending terms in terms of the financing of them. And what happens when the countries in question simply can't make those payday loan payments?
Yeah, and the other interesting thing is when the Chinese
answer to the question is they take the assets, they take the infrastructure, they take your sovereignty even. Sorry, go ahead.
When they come in there with these loans and they build things, they're building things with Chinese workers who are also Chinese People's Liberation Army reservists, you know? And so all they need is a shipment of weapons. They're just a shipment of weapons away for basically having an army in the
occupation. You bet. Fascinating point. And again, I don't think that the U.S. government, particularly under this administration, is paying anything remotely like the attention that they need to this, because they're buttoning up trade relations with these countries. They're securing access to their raw materials and markets. And we're going to find ourselves, I think, at the very short end of this stick if we're not actively opposing and competing in these regards.
Well, in rare earth minerals, the Chinese are trying to get a corner of the market on some of these minerals. And of course, they have military significance. I mean, that's one of the reasons to be in sub-Saharan Africa, to be in some of these other places. And, you know, we've known for years, it's been almost a decade now that they've been threatening Australia, like, you better not be allies with the United States. You better know on what side your bread is buttered. You know, these kind of hints from China to Australia. It's like, this is not friendly.
Hints backed by, you know, trade boycotts and other punitive actions against the Australians for actually standing up to them. And they have done, I think, to their great credit, the Aussies. So, Jeff, just to come back to this question about the Biden administration, we've been remarking in the course of many of our programs on the numbers of people, starting with the president himself and his vice president, Kamala Harris, but going on down basically just about every significant portfolio in the national security space is being occupied by someone who has a, well, tie to or is otherwise compromised by the Chinese Communist Party. And I'm just stunned that there is not more of an outcry about this. There isn't more shock that this is happening, because it seems as though this is sort of national security fundamentals 101. You don't want people who could be blackmailed or coerced or are perhaps even willingly in the service of your most formidable enemy ever in positions that really will determine your national security.
Well, it's just like Alexander Pope's great poem, The Dunciad. You know, he wrote about the goddess of dullness taking over the entire earth. And then the poem ends and, you know, the lights go out. It's chaos and it's darkness is how the poem ends. And we're kind of there because for these kind of policies to be followed, it's the policy of dunces. And of course, it isn't really being a dunce and being a neurotic is as Freud said, is sinister. And they are sinister. And it's not the kind of stupidity that's innocent in any respect. There's something wrong with these people.
Well, and these people are us, unfortunately, to some extent, not the and me so much, because we are trying to pay attention, and I'm sure that's true of our audience as well. They wouldn't be our audience if they weren't, but an awful lot of Americans, ordinary Americans, I kind of think of it as, you know, we've lost the national security gene, which is maybe a dunciad, maybe it's a mutation that is of a genetic kind that creates a disorder that you can bet people like the Chinese Communist Party are no fools, and they are paying attention, and they will exploit these kinds of vulnerabilities if we're, well, stupid enough or disconnected enough to allow them to persist. And Jeff Nyquist, this is one of the reasons why we value so much our visits with you, is you are an antidote to all of that, and I hope and trust that our own audience and the people that they interact with will benefit from what you do at jrnyquist.blog and what you do with our programs. And we'll look forward to visiting with you next week for more on what we can as a people do to survive the present moment. Thanks, Jeff. We'll talk with you then. Next up, we'll speak with former Assistant Secretary of State Robert Charles. Will take stock of what the Supremes are up to and more straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back and joined, as we are privileged to be, with some regularity by a former Assistant Secretary of State by the name of Robert Charles. He has been, among other things, a naval intelligence officer and a counsel in the White Houses of Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. He is the author of a terrific book, Eagles and Evergreens, and the spokesman for, I think, a remarkable organization, the Association of Mature American Citizens. And you can follow his work there at amac.us. Bobby Charles, it's good to have you back. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much, Frank. Thank you.
A lot to talk about, Bobby. I've been visiting with a number of our guests about China, and I know you've got some concerns about what seems to be the growing evidence that the Biden administration, both at the senior-most levels and down through the ranks, are in the mode of appeasing the Chinese Communist Party. And I wanted to see if you agreed, and if so, what are the implications of that at the present time?
Yeah, I think it's very important, Frank, that people understand there's a difference between diplomacy and appeasement. And if you have a concrete, verifiable process for achieving some, could be any number of reasons why you would pursue diplomacy. But diplomacy, at bottom line, involves the verifiable process of trying to get an important outcome without unacceptable risk or loss of life or rights. And anything where you get into the business of reacting by fear edges over toward appeasement. And I think both with both China and with Iran, this administration is either ill-informed, unwilling to accept reality, or in some sort of throwback to the past, willing to undertake appeasement. And of course, on Iran, it has to do with reopening this crazy accord that ultimately gave them the green light for nuclear weapons. With China, it's remarkable. What's happening is that just yesterday or the day before, we had an attorney general nominee up, and all he could say about China, he refused to call them an enemy, refused to subscribe to a lot of the descriptions that, frankly, experts on both sides of the aisle have used, descriptions to describe what China's been doing to us. And he sort of just said, well, we need to watch out for cybercrime, and I think he added intellectual property theft. Now, China is an all-hands-on adversary. They are to us today what the Soviet Union once was, and in fact, in many ways, more dangerous because they know exactly what they're doing. They have more sophistication, and they're operating on every front: economic, security, military. And so what have they done? In recent days, they have done everything from repeated flyovers starting about 3 days after Biden took office, repeated intrusions into and around what is thought of as defense base for Taiwan. They've mobilized fighters and bombers to show Taiwan, I guess, and to show us that they believe Taiwan is theirs. They used for the first time in decades, they said that an independent Taiwan would mean war. They just took away all the rights that they had given to the Catholic Church to have authority over their own personnel in the country. So they've decided that they will now persecute the Christians. They have undertaken a couple of very specific trade acts that again push them in that direction. The list just keeps going on and on. This week, they undertook to promulgate a new maritime law authorizing Coast Guard vessels to fire on ships in the South China Sea. They continue to make mass arrests in Hong Kong. They're prosecuting the seven major leaders there on just basically in a show trial, saying democracy won't live here. So the bottom line is we're watching all this, and the proper and right thing to do is to have a proportional diplomatic response, which is to say, if sanctions are required, they're required. And you need to call China out on these things. And instead of doing that, we're sort of just looking the other way. And China isn't just going to eat our lunch. You know, they're lining up for multiple helpings. So I think we need to be vigilant and strong and tough, and we're not.
And that portends problems because it invites aggression, of course, by adversaries like these. Bobby Charles, let me pivot if I can. I talked in my commentary today about what I consider to be an insider threat to our constitutional republic, and that is the legislative agenda of the Democratic Party in both the House and the Senate, apparently. And I mentioned that, we've got on the one hand H.R. 1, which is designed to ensure we never have another free and fair election. You and I have talked about that in recent days. We've got this amnesty and deportations and open border policy that will be enshrined, apparently, in some kind of legislation, with all that portends. We just talked about with Kevin Freeman this stimulus bill that will likely, I think, be the coup de grace of our currency as the reserve of the world. And not least, there's this bill, H.R. 127, that I guess is kind of an assault on our Second Amendment rights to bear arms. Talk about particularly that last item, but whether we're really looking at, you know, the kind of assault on freedom that we've seen in other nations where either as a result of democratic elections or in this case, I think, a stolen election, really, you know, sort of totalitarian forces are being unleashed on people unawares.
Yes. So to make the bridge, you know, we're being pushed internationally by China and Iran and others, and we're not reacting. We're being pushed internally. And this is what AMAC spends a lot of time on, defending the Constitution as well as solvency and providing, obviously, benefits to seniors over the age of 50 who consider themselves more conservative than not. And these are, you know, it's available membership, by the way, to everyone at AMAC. But the bottom line is AMAC fights against really bad legislation and fights for good legislation. And H.R. 1, as you described, is dangerous because it federalizes what is constitutionally a state-level prerogative for our elections, and it also suppresses political speech. H.R. 127 goes a step further, and it isn't just a minimal impingement on the Second Amendment. This is a bill which, if there wasn't a filibuster, if there wasn't a legislative filibuster right now available, we would be in deep trouble because a majority vote would allow this to go through, and Biden has been supportive. What does it do? It details all registration of all firearms, including where the guns are in your house, and then it makes it all public, names, addresses, everything. Can you imagine if you did that with your jewelry or something like that? But never mind the government knowing where it is. Actually, every thief that wants a gun knows where to go. Anyone buying a gun must undergo a psychiatric evaluation with an attorney or a psychiatrist. You have owners of firearms are going to have insurance to justify it. Everything that is a military weapon down to and including, you know, not only stylish grips, but hunting knives or, you know, military style, anything if it's a weapon, it becomes required for registration. Psychologists appointed by the attorney general are to, who, by the way, is a, you know, this nominee strongly anti-gun. They have the right to deny. They have the right to put you ultimately. If you're hospitalized for anything tied to a mental illness or disturbance or diagnosis, they can confiscate the gun. It goes on and on. And then, interestingly, and you can't pass it down through the family, and you can't give it to somebody under the age of 18, and you have endless descriptors of new licenses for antiques, et cetera, all of which require attorney general approval. You have to get a psychiatric evaluation.
Yeah, that. Wait a minute. That psychiatric evaluation is a particularly alarming thing to me because I gather it can be triggered by anybody sort of pronouncing that you need one, right? And God knows how many of us would be subject to that.
And I'll just say, you know, the last thing, Frank, that makes this just so obnoxious, and it boggles the mind that a piece of legislation like this would even be introduced, never mind defended, never mind the potential for passage, is that they reinstitute, you know, all the Democrats were against mandatory minimum sentences when it had to do with counter-narcotics. Now they have put in mandatory minimum sentences starting at $30,000 and going up to $150,000, and then 15 to 25 years in prison if you don't end up following the licensing requirements. So talk about draconian. Is it unconstitutional? Of course. But the Supreme Court right now, you know, is a last catcher of the final, you know, behind all the other protections we have. And this bill should never get through.
Well, and I was hoping we would talk about the Supremes and in particular this latest rulings or decision not to take up election 2020 related matters, and this will be for another day, Bobby, with you. But you've set the table for us of the sorts of things that I think really should be front and center in the attention of the American people. As always, we appreciate your insights, and look forward to visiting with you again in the near future. We look forward to talking with the rest of you again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.